guys notice I moved the home studio into the home gym.
I saw that.
Spaces.
Yeah. I did notice that you were just leaning all the way in on this. You know, the worst part is I'm wearing my quasi form fitting hoodie. You know, I'm getting back into the working out this week. You know what I'm saying? I feel good about the way it fits my shoulders. And then Izzy went and put one in the dryer on extra hot and was like, I have TV to do. Here we are now. Welcome to Highly Questionable. Mike Golic Jr. and the Railroad Man. Loose.
This is loose fitting clothing.
Should the Washington football team keep its name?
All right, so we have reports now that the Washington football team, which used to be called something that we never have to say again, may keep the Washington football team name in 2021, maybe a permanent name in 2022, and maybe that permanent name is the Washington football team. Here's where I'm going to give them some credit. This would be the most patience that Daniel Snyder has ever shown toward anything ever, and it's important here because get a name when you get a name. Like, you don't have to force it. You don't have to put up something whack. You needed to get beyond the initial name change and let people just get cool with the idea that you weren't doing that anymore. And now that you have your little uniforms last year with the color scheme and the numbers on the helmet, people seem to dig it. It doesn't really matter what the name is. Like, a whole lot of people, I'm one of these, I got me a little, like, my own little LLC, right? And you spend all your time coming up with a name for it. I came up with mine quick, but most people spend all this time coming up with it. And you know what? It doesn't matter at all. Nobody cares. They're going to root for you because you're the local team, not because of what you call.
And because you win, like, I think a large portion of why we didn't talk about this as much as maybe Washington football team fans would have before the summer is because they ended up winning the division, because Alex Smith coming back was a story that masked all of this. And we get this reminder whenever stuff like this comes up. The only thing that matters is the win in here. Like, this is going to be a lot easier to pick a team if all of a sudden you can get more Fitzmagic strolling into that stadium and making things happen. Like, we just went through this with Texas where we saw this. And I thought Stephen Gottfried over at Split Zone Duo, works at Banner Society, made a great point about that, which is traditions and names and mascots are things you latch onto when your team is not very good. When you're winning football games, all that stuff becomes secondary when you can point to the product on the field and say that that's worthwhile. So I think that, in conjunction with what Monty mentioned, that Daniel Snyder seems to be taking a back seat. Like, the reporting says Jason Wright is handling this stuff, and we've got him not handling the day-to-day. That's the best news if I'm a Washington football team fan.
Well, Gojo, you mentioned Jason Wright, and one of the quotes that he had that I thought was just kind of interesting, right? He said, our fans deserve us to be thoughtful with this process. And I don't know if they were that thoughtful when it came to the previous name and we're being so stubborn and hanging on to it. So that's one question mark there. But look, I grew up a Dolphins fan, okay? And I grew up convinced, because I became a Dolphins fan at 7 years old when they lost the Super Bowl to Joe Montana, convinced that they weren't winning a Super Bowl because their name was too soft, because the mascot was the Dolphins. I was seven, and now you've got people saying, oh, yeah, the mascot matters. It doesn't matter. 75% of these people probably have fantasy football team names that they change every single year, and they love it. In fact, I would venture to say that if every NFL team changed their name every single year to some clever fantasy football team name, they would sell out of merchandise. Bo, you're right. It doesn't matter. They're just putting on a show here, and they'll probably come up with something that half the people will love, half the people will hate, and then 20 years from now, they'll still be selling that same exact merchandise.
Yo, but can we talk about something else that's happening with that team? You guys remember not that long ago, it sounded like Fred Smith and the other minority owner of the team were trying to get Dan Snyder up out of there. Today, Tyler Dunn has reported that Snyder has bought up all those minority shares, and he is now the 100% owner of the team. He survived that, but he also seems to be taking a back seat on things like we mentioned earlier, which sounds like they told him, you can have the whole team, but you got to leave it alone.
Which contender should be most desperate to make a trade? The Heat, 76ers, or Lakers?
Yes. The answer is yes. The trade deadline in the NBA is tomorrow. I cannot think of a season where at this point it feels more wide open as to who can or cannot win a championship. Like, especially with the Lakers having these injuries, right? They seem to be the odds-on favorite before that. After this, Anybody can win this thing. Everybody should be looking to make some sort of move to upgrade themselves at this moment. Because what you don't want to be is a team like Boston that was always playing for next year, always playing for next year, and now we don't even know if they're going to make the playoffs this year. Right. So if I'm the Sixers, yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way to bring in a guy like Kyle Lowry. If I'm the Clippers, I'm trying to figure out a way to bring in a distributor. If I'm the Nets, I don't even know how I'm going to bring somebody in, but I do think we're going to need a little bit more because we just don't have enough depth. Everybody needs to be trying to figure out a way to make this happen because these could be the most fascinating NBA playoffs that any of us have seen.
Yeah, there's more options there than just the three that Charlie, our producer, offered. But I'm going to stick to those three and pick and respect the answer, I suppose. And I'm going to go with the Miami Heat of those three. And the reason for it, so if the Lakers are healthy, right, they've already upgraded from last year. You believe that they can win a championship with what they have. The 76ers, you could argue the same thing because when healthy, they were running this league for a while and Joel Embiid looks like the MVP. And so if you're tweaking there necessarily or if you're just like trying to change because you think you're not good enough, I think you might be overthinking it there. The Miami Heat need to make a change and if they're going to come anywhere close to making the NBA Finals from last year because everything was working for them last year in that bubble. Goran Dragic was an all-star level player. Right now, he is not. You look at Duncan Robinson shooting 44% from three last year. This year, it's 38. Tyler Hero hasn't really grown into the person that you saw pretty much every game in those playoffs. So if they're going to get anywhere close to making a run in the postseason and match what they did last year, they need to upgrade somehow. I think it's probably a Kyle Lowry type of move and maybe move on from Tyler Hero. Who knows? When it comes to expectations, the Miami Heat have their own internal expectations. They're probably going to have to make a move if they're going to meet those.
Yeah, I think the Miami Heat make a ton of sense, but I think the desperation is going to start to leak out to Los Angeles for the Lakers because I just look at the situation. We know their bread is buttered with two guys that, when healthy, make this. And you could argue that without them on the floor, this is the office without Steve Carell. No matter what you do to this, it's never really going to function in a way that makes it work to anyone's liking. But you got to bridge to that point. And the Lakers are in this weird, tense spot where – you've got to gauge, all right, how much do we push these two guys that, especially with Anthony Davis, are vital to our future, and with LeBron James, who we know going into year 18, all of these things starting to add up with his age, versus, all right, do we bring someone in here? Because, man, seeing them play against the Pelicans last night, who have been sorry in their own right, that is going to be a really bad basketball team until one of those guys decides to come back. Bad enough in a competitive West where all of a sudden you could be dealing with the possibility of that play-in in a way that I don't think LeBron James is going to be able to stomach and could force him to call his own shot and say, I'm coming back sooner than anyone that organization might be comfortable with. And so if you can find something, anything to buoy through that time period, I feel like the Lakers got to take that shot.
But what is that answer, though? Because you're talking about your two franchise guys that are down. And if you're talking about Steve Carell, like, who is the Will Ferrell here? Who are the people that are coming to save the show in the short term? Because they're not really available, at least not for what the Lakers have to offer in return.
Well, here's what the Lakers' problem is. If Anthony Davis can't come back and be Anthony Davis, they don't have a chance at winning a championship. Hard stop. And I did a podcast this morning with Bruce Bowen, and he reminded us, calf strain. Remember when Kevin Durant had a calf strain and what that ultimately turned into? Do any of us have any idea when Anthony Davis is coming back? Because I don't, and I don't know what it's going to look like when he does come back. Like, people talk about him getting dinged up a lot. This is completely different than those things that have him miss a game or two every now and then. This could change the course of his career.
Well, and that's why for the Lakers, it makes a ton of sense, and it does, to proceed with caution here. But we know there's that tension between what the Lakers franchise sees as their potential long-term answer with a young star in Anthony Davis and what LeBron James might be saying inside that building if he feels like he's good enough to come back and you don't have AD. I don't know if he's willing to say, yeah, well, we won it last year. I'll chalk this season as we get later and later in my career. And that just seems like something that could create more problems for them in the immediacy.
All right, guys, that was great NBA analysis. But Bomani, did you really think that just by going on mute, we were going to let those sneezes go?
No, I thought that by going on mute, I was going to allow everybody to continue the television show because I am a team player, although it seems like the team is about to play me.
We have to play it.
I will admit mine was a cough when we get there.
Did you see how smooth that was with that?
It was, yeah. You see my eyes watering already? It was tickling my hair at the time.
That's the best part is the lead-up face.
No, please air his face. Please air his face.
I'm sweating now.
No,
just looking
I'm not
at
ready
it.
To call it on my heat yet.
Excuse me. That was so disturbing that I had to sneeze.
Clinton dabbed with his.
He actually tried to play it off. That was amazing. That was so disturbing that I had to sneeze. No, it wasn't.
Up next on HQ.
I started off defending John bleeping Crotty, and you know, he's just pulling up for threes. I see his ankles in my eyes, and I'm like, all right, somebody else check this guy. I'm out of here.
Do you question if this ref deserves to keep reffing?
All right, this gentleman's name is Tim Peel. He is a referee in the NHL. From what they tell us, he's like the Joe West of that, like the Scott Foster of that, like the, what's his name? The one dude in college we all hate, Ted Valentine. He's like that guy, just the referee that people don't like. All right, so they called a penalty there. Oh, there we go. All right, called a penalty, a little soft. All right, so we have there. There's the penalty. Now, this is Tim Peel, the linesman, afterward.
It wasn't much, but I wanted to get a penalty against Nashville early.
Yeah, there we go. He was on a hot mic, got picked up, and they went to commercial once they realized it was a hot mic, which, by the way, is hustling backwards if backwards ever hustle. Keep it going. Let's see what the rest of this is going to be. Should he be able to ref again? No, because you can't get caught doing that. And the dude had planned to retire next month. He messed up his pitcher behind this.
Look, I understand the idea of sort of setting up a makeup call, maybe, right? You're a referee. You understand how the game flows, and maybe this was going to get physical. So early on, you say, hey, let me call something light so that, you know, the game sort of flows the way I want it to. And, you know, there aren't so many penalties, and it isn't that physical. But, Bo, it's like you said. You know you're mic'd up. A, don't drop the F-bomb when you're mic'd up, potentially, right? And then B, don't admit to your fellow refs, hey, I'm controlling the game with my calls. That's the last thing that you want in any of these professional sports, is the referee to feel like they are controlling the game. I understand a makeup call, but to set up a makeup call and then go ahead and tell everybody about it, it's just absolutely awful officiating. So yeah, he probably shouldn't have been doing this for as long as he has. So happy retirement, Tim Peel.
He's got a head start on it, got an early go at it, because you're right, Izzy. That's the difference, is the control in this spot. Like going into it, like I sat in plenty of meetings here, and this is the one learning thing I got to the NFL, where you see inside these meetings, they scout the officials, they scout the crews just like everybody else. So you know tendencies, and I understand, man, if some crew's going to call holding tighter, I got to try and work a little bit less. But it's one thing to know they're human beings with tendencies, and it's another to know that this guy's out here thinking he can pull the strings like a puppet master on here. And that second part is never going to work. I have as much empathy as I humanly can for officials, which isn't a lot because they're a third of the game that manages to escape criticism, literally in this case, more often than they should. And so there's part of me that looks at this and says, yeah, this is exactly how this is supposed to go.
Do you question if this high schooler should have known better?
All right, before we get to this clip of Brian Scalabrine, age 43, playing against this high schooler who underestimated Brian Scalabrine, I want to tell you this story. My buddy Clarence went to Jack Haley's basketball camp, the late Jack Haley. In his time in the league, he was mostly known as being the guy who rolled the bench and kept Dennis Rodman in line. That was his job. My man said he only remembers one thing from that basketball camp: how good Jack Haley was at basketball. Watch this. Now, Brian Scalabrine, you know, he was kind of what they call him, the human victory cigar or whatever. So they playing this game for their shoes. You notice, by the way, Scalabrine doesn't have a sense of humor about this at all. He's so sick of y'all thinking that y'all got something for him. Put that shoulder in his chest. I love it. It's not just, it's old man game on top
of
everything else.
Yeah, it's nothing special. It is absolutely nothing special. Let me get to this point. Put a shoulder in you. Boom. I mean, I don't know how he didn't play every minute of the NBA doing this.
Like, how did this kid not know the last thing you wanted was for this to be on camera?
And then, and you know, if you pull out the camera, it's not just, hey, I'm beating you 11.
Woo!
Yep.
This is a clean 11-0 beatdown.
But do you see how personally Scalabrine took that? Like, that was dad energy there. The you are not going to beat me. I want to know what else that young man said to Scalabrine, because he seems to be a pretty well-natured sort of dude, and he gave him the blues.
Well, Scalabrine already did this. He basically challenged the city of Boston after he retired, said, hey, come beat me, come play me one-on-one. If you can beat me, congratulations, you're really good. He didn't lose. He didn't lose, and it reminds me of one time in 2006 where we were playing a pickup game. It was a bunch of media guys, okay? I think Chris Broussard was probably the best player there at the time. John Crotty, formerly of a bunch of teams in the NBA and the Virginia Cavaliers, came out of a weight room, arms swollen, really tired. Hey, say, come play with us, John, come on. Okay, and I started off defending John bleeping Crotty, and, you know, he's just pulling up for threes. I see his ankles in my eyes, and I'm like, all right, somebody else check this guy. I'm out of here.
It's this amazing phenomenon, because I knew as soon as I saw that kid's first jumper, by the way, this wasn't just going to go bad. It was going to go really ugly in this spot. But I always said that there are threats and there are challenges. Like, if you walk into a bar and you were to see me as an offensive lineman at 300 pounds, I'm a threat. Like, you're not going to walk up there and start anything there. But I got buddies that played linebacker and tight end that any drunk dude looking to show off went over, and they saw a challenge in that spot. No one's going to walk up to Shaq or Kevin Durant or any of these guys post-career because you're not going to try the seven-foot monster. But when you see Brian Scalabrine, you see a challenge. You see an access point, and he has been used to being tried like that his entire life. He had to get by on effort, technique, and all the things he just put into you there. And he is just waiting now for opportunities to let loose because that chip never leaves your shoulder when you come up like that.
Do you know how many times he had to do this to people to simply make the NBA? At every turn in his life, no matter how tall he was, nobody thought he was good at basketball.
Do you question if Durante Jones should take this as a compliment?
All right, Durante Jones is the new defensive coordinator at LSU. His head coach is Ed Orgeron, and let's just be honest, we're playing this because it's Ed Orgeron talking.
I interviewed everybody. We didn't get the first, second. I'll tell you what, we got him on offense. I'm happy with him. I talked to Joe about him. I interviewed him. I told him exactly what I want. They have the answers. They're very smart. I couldn't be more pleased with him. You know, Durante was like the fourth or fifth choice. Well, so was I. Who cares? He's here.
Here's the thing, though. I think he absolutely means that, right? Like, for Ed Orgeron, he's just like, look, all you do is get in the door. Yeah, we tried to get some other people. Oh, well, now you're here. I don't know if it's a compliment, but it's actually not shade.
I don't think it's a compliment, but I would actually be thrilled to hear that, because the number one thing I want to know is that you're not going to lie to me. And once you hear him say that in the press conference on the way in, when nothing's happened at this point yet and you guys don't have any sort of history together, you know, all right, I don't know much about this guy. I know he sure as hell isn't going to lie to me about anything, because he didn't even want to give me the glowing entrance on this job.
Lie to me. Lie to me, because I want to spend some time feeling good about like what I did here. Like, oh, I beat out such and such and such and such. Oh, yeah, I'm feeling good about myself. And nope, just my boss telling me that, yeah, you were like the fifth or sixth choice. So now you feel cruddy and you have to perform because you're probably going to get fired at some point. No, I don't want to hear that. Lie to me. Absolutely.
I got news for you here, Izzy. Knowing what we know about the way that college football works, I don't know much about Mr. Jones, but I am pretty sure that Durante is really glad to get a job of this level by hook, by crook, by anything else. Trust me, he knew they tried to get somebody first. We always know that.
Tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, Hornets and Rockets.
Hey, shout out to the Rockets, who are no longer on a 20-game losing streak. They got themselves a victory over Toronto, and they won that game kind of big, by the way. Because, man, did you see Steven Silas after the 20th?
Hey, Coach.
Damn.
Tough one as the streak kind of continues. Did you feel your team getting tight at all down the stretch? Do you feel like the weight of these losses is kind of building?
Or worse.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow. Dude, you know he was sad because I guarantee you he spends a lot of effort in his life trying to stop you from seeing the top of his head because he got that Bundini Brown thing going. Here's what it looked like after the game when they beat Toronto. Look at this. Yeah, you can't even see his face. You don't need to see his face.
You can see coming off the top of his head.
He is hugging John Wall way tighter than John Wall is hugging him. John Wall used to play for the Wizards. He has seen these ancient dusky rivers before. Mike, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued. As someone who once, and I kid you not, our record at Notre Dame at one point was so bad against ranked opponents that in 2010 we beat Utah at home, who was ranked something like in the 20s, and our students rushed the field. And I looked around and said, you know what? We kind of needed this one right here. So, yes, I am intrigued because I understand what it's like to come out of that drought and just need to celebrate anything, something.
Dizzy.
I mean, I'm intrigued. I'm a little bit less intrigued. Actually, that first video of Silas was what I looked like when I heard the LaMelo Ball injury news, because he was all the reason to watch, to even turn on the NBA some nights, and him missing the rest of the season with that fractured wrist hurts. But yeah, I mean, look, Silas at Houston, it's got to hurt doubly when he watches James Harden do. Even last night, James Harden won without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and a bunch of people that not a whole lot of people know could have been doing that in Houston. In the meantime, you're losing 20 games in a row. It's got to hurt a lot. So, yeah, just good for them, I suppose.
I tell you, it is good for the Rockets, too. Be glad your coach is Steven Silas and not Paul Silas, because somebody would have got yoked up before it got you 20. All right, that is the show. Check out Izzy Gutierrez somewhere in Miami doing push-ups. Check out Mike Golic on Chanae and Golic, 4 to 7, ESPN Radio.
I think you know where I'm going after the show.
Yes, right behind you to your cathedral.
The Iron Pile. Let's go.